Hi, this is Financial Advisor of the Year, Jim Brogan of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Winning with my good friend and colleague, Anna Lee Leonard.
You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee. Anna Lee is a retirement and estate planner, a member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group, as well as a sought-after speaker on such topics as income planning, 401k rollovers, and advanced IRA reduction strategies. When not working in her private practice, Anna Lee joins with other certified senior advisors to promote top-quality services to mature adults in the Pensacola area. Her goal is to help you prepare for and live comfortably in retirement. You can reach her office at 437-3127 or online at mainstaypensacola.com. Or call her now at 437-1620 on Winning with Anna Lee.
That's the truth. Ooh, yeah, everybody's a winner. Good morning, and welcome to Winning with Mainstay and Anna Lee and Bob. So happy that we're all here this morning. And call us now, 437-1620, or text us if you have a question, you want to make a comment. A lot of things going on, a lot of unrest, a lot of people have a lot of questions. So if you have anything that we can help you with or point you in a direction where you can get an answer, we would be glad to do that. So let's just kind of talk about what I found was an interesting fact that I found this morning. Bob, you travel a lot toward the north. I think your sister lives in New York, doesn't she?
I have two sisters in New York, correct.
Two in New York.
Right.
Okay, so have you ever bought a bagel in New York?
Yes, I have. I can't remember believe it or not, most of the bagel shops are just, you know, locally owned. But go ahead. They're larger and all different shapes, that's for sure.
Well, you know, I used to think when I grew up being from Louisiana that bagels were what you got out of the grocery store, those terrible chewy things. And it was like, oh, these are terrible. Till they had a real one. It's like, oh, this is really good stuff. But do you know, in New York, if you buy a whole bagel, you don't pay a tax on it. But if it's prepared in any way, including if it's just cut, you pay an extra 8 cents tax per bagel. Did you know that?
Wow. No, I did not.
Yeah. Is that like an interesting thing? I mean, because, you know, like even when we go buy bagels for the office, what do? We get them sliced because right. You want to bring them in where people can just pick them up and put whatever they want on them and eat them. So in New York, if you buy a bag of them and you get them sliced, they add an extra 8 cents tax. And I'd love for someone to be able to give me an explanation about that and why that is, because it's just really a strange thing.
Yeah, I know two people in New York City that don't know that as well. So
yeah,
but don't know that they care either. So
yeah, well, you know, if you want to save yourself a little bit of money and you're in New York and you're buying bagels, cut them yourself, doggone.
Yeah.
So just a little something interesting to talk to you about. You know, we're sitting in a time, and I know Bob's going to agree with me on this, that we just have a lot of uncertainty that's happening in our world with the threat of COVID and the unrest with the elections, everything that's going on in different parts of the world where unfortunately our own people are hurting each other, tends for a lot of unrest. And we've got a lot of people that are getting close to retirement during all this. So I'm finding a lot of questions that are people haven't really asked before, and they're bringing up things because they're nervous.
Right.
I mean, you've seen that, Bob, haven't
absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And as you know, Anna Lee, you and I didn't have much time this morning to talk, and I took the liberty of coming up with a factoid or two of my own.
Okay.
And it's interesting that you're talking about everything going on in the election and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I looked up voter turnout by state, and I thought this was really interesting. So I'm going to turn the tables on you. I'm going to ask you,
okay,
what state, or, you know, there's, of course, there's a few that are, have very high voter turnout. I'm talking over 70% voter turnout. And of course, that's 70% of eligible voters getting out and voting. And what do you think the highest voter turnout states are?
Wow. I mean, that would be a wild guess. And as a wild guess, right, I would say maybe California.
California is, I don't see them in the top 10. But
wow.
think okay, north. Think north. And
New York.
Well, New York is high, but the highest, the very highest, are Maine, New Hampshire, and Minnesota.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I can understand Maine and New Hampshire. They don't have a whole lot of people.
Right.
You know,
right.
So if you get them out there, I mean, they don't have a long way to go to have to vote.
Exactly. So. But I'm shocked at the difference in voter turnout percents.
Yeah.
We're talking about in excess of 70% in some states, and then some states in the 20s, 20%.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And we won't pick on the states with the low voter turnout, but and then I did one other thing. I looked at the countries with the highest voter turnout, and this is for their elections to elect their president. And interestingly enough, the highest voter turnout on the planet are the Scandinavian countries, Belgium, Sweden, and then you drop down and you have South Korea, Israel, New Zealand, but highly developed countries, and what I would say, very for the most part, I won't say all are stable, but anyway, I think it's sort of interesting. The United States does not crack the top 10.
See, and we need to. We
right.
need to. And
right.
and people, we're in September. Today is September 1st. The elections are going to be coming up soon. And whatever your affiliation is, we have got to get out and vote. We've got to study the facts. We have to see what's going on. And
right.
vote on that, not on emotion.
Right.
But please get out, because your vote is going to make a lot of difference for your retirement, for the economic condition of the United States. So please get out and do that. And while we're talking about that, let's talk about the fact of all these people that are getting ready to retire.
Right.
And so many of them come in here, and I hear so many people that beat up on yourselves. I didn't save enough. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. Well, you know what? You just got to stop that, because you can't go back and undo it.
Mm-hmm.
We got to work with what you've got. So let's work at what you have, because it's really a waste of time to sit and talk about all the things that you could have done better. Now, if you're far enough out, some of the things we're going to talk about will help you now. But those who have already made the mistakes and it's behind them, let's work with what you have and not concentrate on beating yourself up. And here's one of the first things I think that we as Americans especially forget to do, and that is to live below your means.
Right.
Let me say that again. Live below your means. But what we're seeing that has evolved over the years, we've kind of become a culture of, if you want it, go get it.
Right. Right. And there's, let's face it, there's a lot of ways to acquire things, and I'm talking about credit cards or payment terms and everything else, but identifying your wants and needs and really
exactly
landing closer to the needs will help a lot.
And I'm not saying you've got to live like a monk or a nun, but at the same stage, if you can lower expenses today, you're going to have fewer expenses to pay for in retirement years. I've seen people right at retirement, maybe 5 years out, 4 years out, and instead of starting to bring things under control, they're going out buying a new house that's twice as expensive as the one they've been living in, or planning trips that it's like, well, we never took them, we're going to go take them now. And I'm not saying you can't do those things, but you've got to make sure you can afford to do those things. And right. that's what Bob's saying, the difference between a want and a need. You know, I have a motorhome, and I would love, oh my gosh, I would love to have the one that's called the Zephyr. That thing is like, oh my gosh, there are coaches out there that are $1 million, $2 million, the Prevost. You can't get a Prevost for less than $1 million new off the showroom floor. Would I love that? Oh, I mean, I salivate when I see them. Am I going to get one? No.
What? Hold on. Did I hear you right? How much?
The Prevost starts at $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where it starts, and it goes up from there. That's why you see a lot of those, or like the city buses, or the model of choice that the professionals travel in.
Okay.
Because they are such an outstanding coach with comfort and space and amenities. Huh. But you pay for that stuff, you know? So you live within what you can afford. And very often you see that by lowering expenses today to have the dollars to live on comfortably in retirement. One of the things we as Americans are in love with is our automobiles. And that's kind of why I mentioned the RV, because that's really just a automobile on steroids. You know, it's like what's his name? It's the Arnold Schwarzenegger of cars, you know.
That's right. That's right.
You know, so you dial back a little bit on that. And as you're going into retirement, start thinking about, do you want to take a loan, or do you want to pay cash for a car, or do you want to save money and then pay yourself back?
Exactly.
You know,
cars are great. You want a nice car, but, you know, look at how much you're driving and what you really need. Again, wants and needs. The difference between a want and a need is emotion. And it's just, I am surprised that, you know, sometimes we meet with these folks and they truly have a fleet of cars. And, you know, you need one, maybe two, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that will make a big, big difference. Now, part of what we need to talk about, and boy, I've always found this the hardest thing to talk about with clients. Let your adult children grow up. Stop supporting your adult children. I have one client whose adult son is way past his mid-40s. And guess where he still lives?
At home.
At home.
Right.
And you know, so I said, well, does he pay you for rent? Does he buy groceries? No, he didn't. Well, excuse me. What is he going to do when you pass away and now there's nobody there to continue to spoon feeding?
Right. Right. And it, of course, it goes well beyond providing, you know, living accommodations and everything. But yeah, you've got to cut that cord, and if you don't, you're doing them a disservice. You know, you got to grow up, learn, make mistakes, fall down, you know, get back up.
Fall down, get back up. So here's some tough advice. Let them get their own cell phone. Don't let them stay on your plan. Let them start looking for their own health insurance or make sure that if they're staying on yours for expense while they're in college, that they're doing something to pay you. And then, you know, that $200 a month you're paying for their cell bill, you could be putting into a Roth IRA for the next 15 years. And that's going to give you a nice sum of money, you know, at a 5% return. You'd have more than $53,000 of tax-free money that you would have to be able to spend. Because here's what I see with the people that tend to be the users of mom and dad. When mom and dad need it, they're not there.
That's exactly right.
You know, that's a hard thing to talk about, but we have to. You're the one who's going to wind up taking care of yourself, so you have to start doing it now. And part of that, and it, I guess you could call it tough love.
Right.
One of my clients was in here yesterday, and it's so sad. She's got two grown kids, hasn't heard from them either in over a year, and both are substance abusers. Hmm. Both have been in prison. Both have, you know, by this stage, if she hasn't been able to quote unquote rescue them, guess what? She's not going to be able to do that later on. And yet, you know, a couple of years ago, she had one of them living with her because he had gotten out of rehab and, you know, out of his jail stint. Supposedly he was good. And she took him in and he lived with her till he fell off the wagon again. So, gosh, it's got to be such a hard, hard thing to do, but you've got to stop that support as soon as you possibly can.
And
make them grow up.
Exactly. And it begins with the parent. It begins with the parent.
Yes.
And you go through the same thing. You know, the first couple of things we talked about, you know, you know, how is the parent identifying needs and wants and holding themselves to that standard? And how is their spending, how does their spending mirror what they're preaching? You know, I mean, you know, you've got to exhibit the behavior that you want from your children. And so that begins with the parent.
Yeah, you got to walk the walk and talk the talk.
That's right.
I mean, that's it, you know. And people have heard me say this before, and you know it's true. I came from a family where I was very spoiled by my father. However, he made me stand up on my own two feet. Mm-hmm. And when I lived in New Orleans, you know, I paid my own rent. I paid for my own insurance. Not that he didn't show up every now and then with something extra, but he certainly made sure that I took responsibility very quickly. And I, to this day, I thank him for that. So if you have a comment or a question, call us or fax us at 437-1620. We would love to hear from you, because the things we're talking about are extremely important for those of you getting ready for retirement within the next 5-10 years or closer, those of you who are living in retirement. Now, here's another one that's on the other side of the spectrum. If your parents are still alive, you have to get them to talk to you. And boy, that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our people who are in their 80s, 90s, older, they were always taught to be very, very private and very quiet about finances.
Yes.
And there's always this fear of, you know, why do you want to talk to me about my money? You want to know how much you're getting? Or, you know, it's all in how you approach this, because you have to know if all of a sudden you might be financially and time-wise responsible to take care of your parents if they get ill.
Sure.
You know, so approach it with your parents of, look, you know, we've been listening to Emily and Bob, and we go in, we talk to them, they take care of our money. And one of the things that, they've told us to be financially secure is to have a conversation with you about your well-being. And let your parents know it doesn't have a thing to do with inheritance. Right. That's not the issue. But, you know, all of us, I think if we can retire really well and we see our parents starving to death, your retirement's not going to mean much to you.
Right. And how many times do we sit down with folks, and I'm talking about people in their 60s, and their parents are still living. And they said, you know, are you expecting any sort of windfall? Or I have no idea. They would, you know, and we're talking to, you know, successful, you know, say 60-year-old clients or somewhere around 60 years older that are planning for retirement, and they don't have any idea. And so that's, I think that is a generational thing, and I think that that will change. You know, and another generational thing, and I think about this all the time, you know, younger folks today, and we talk about the cars and everything they want. Mm-hmm. It is so easy now to acquire these things. And Annalie, when you and I were growing up, it was, you know, you had to save because you couldn't you couldn't walk onto a used car lot or even a dealership for a new car.
Right.
And, you know, they'd, you know, what are you doing here, kid? Get out of here. You know, you can't afford this. Now these same people with the same, you know, at the same age and you know, same kind of credit, they can get that car. They can walk off that or drive off that lot with a new car or a used car. Not back in our day. And then we have everything that's in front of us, you know, being able to buy things with a credit card, you know, online. And it's just, I hate to say it's unfair, but these are different times. But that's why we need to double down as parents, do a better job, lead by example, identify needs and wants, and you know, and hopefully all these folks turn out all right.
Right. And go back to the parents talking to the older parents. What you want them to know is are they concerned about having financial worries? Are they concerned about their care as they are aging? You don't want to wait to the last minute and have to do what we call emergency Medicaid planning. If people are worried and they're concerned that they're not going to be able to support themselves, this may be the time now to go and see someone like Jason Wandell, who is an elder law planning attorney, and not all of a sudden when the parent has been diagnosed, they're in a full coverage facility and you find out they can't pay the bill. This is how we have to approach that conversation, as I want to be able to help you as much as I can. And I want to know if we need to start that help now to prevent a catastrophe or emergency planning later. But that's a very, very important conversation to have. We've talked more than once about the cost of care, and that cost is not going down. It is escalating. So you want to sit down, have that heart-to-heart conversation with your parents. What I've had some of my clients do is we all sit at a table, myself in the conversation, because sometimes I can help bridge that uneasiness of, you know, your children are not here to find out how much money you have. Your children are here out of concern. They want to make sure that if the worst occurs, you're going to be able to take care of yourself, or do they need to be prepared to come in and help? Or do we need now to start seeking some type of help? These are the kinds of conversations that we have got to have. And now flip that over to the younger. You've got to be able to say to these younger people in your family, no, I'm sorry. I can't do this because this retirement money was set aside to pay off my home so that I could live comfortably in retirement. And no, I can't give it to you to buy a house. So keep that in mind. Let's go find out what's happening in the world, and we'll continue this conversation when we get back. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there, and they stay there, and they stay there. And they stay there. Up, down, down. Win, win. That's what we want to make you do. We want to make you win every single solitary day. And I think a large part of winning is preparation. You know, you don't see an Olympic winner that goes out there and wins these things that they do and has never practiced before. They're ready, they're hyped, they've done the hard work ahead of time. And retirement is the same thing. You've got to do the work ahead of time to be prepared so that you can win. So we've covered in the first half hour a couple of things. We've talked about living below your means. We've talked about, you know, making sure you can afford the automobile you're driving, separating wants from needs. The adult kids, make them grow up, make them pay their own bills. You know, I know we all wind up helping out every now and then, but for goodness sake, don't continue to support them, okay? And then the last thing we talked about was sitting down and having your parents open up to you so that, you know, if they're going to be financially secure, because think about it, as you age and you're getting into retirement, they have been in retirement and may have used a lot of their assets already or may not have planned as well as you did. So we have to know, do we have to do some preventative measures now, or the things we have to be prepared to do?
Exactly.
So whenever we talk about these things, we're talking about how do you win? Well, this is how you win. You're prepared. You get ready. So one of the other things that I think is very, very important, if you're in a home and you're still working, you want to think about two things. If you want to try to stay in that home as long as possible, while you're working and you've got the money coming in, do the things that make that house more livable.
Right.
And, you know, and that may be as simple as changing the type of floor that you have. It might be remodeling a kitchen so that it's easier to get to the stove and the sinks, and making sure that stove is up to date. Might be putting in a safer shower, or putting bars in the shower, or a seat in the shower.
Right. Or is the house suitable at all long term?
Exactly.
You know, if all the bedrooms are upstairs. I mean, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just a better idea to not start over, but downsize. You've been a great steward of that home, and turn it over to somebody else.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes people are able to stay in their homes. I have a friend who is 84 this week. She's lived alone now for several years and is doing just fine. But she is also a client and was one of those people who was smart enough to do some adaptations on her home before she needed them. So those things are there for her so that she can stay in that house. And I think that's one of the hardest decisions people have to make, is either downsizing or moving.
Sure.
You know, because you've been in a house for goodness, how long, and how much junk do we accumulate? Oh, yeah, my gosh.
I know. How about a lifetime's worth, right?
A lifetime worth, you know, and anybody that knows me know I love my clothes, and I tend to stay the same size. So I have a lot of clothes because I don't have to get rid of them because they don't fit anymore. But I do like new ones.
That's okay. They're little clothes.
They are a little close, so they don't take up a lot of room.
That's right.
But I'm going to have to, if ever I decide to leave that house, I'm going to have to think about some serious downsizing, or going to a place that has a couple of bedrooms and I can make one a closet. So,
exactly.
You got to think about those things. How long do I want to maintain a yard, or can I afford to pay someone to do that yard for me? Are my ceilings too high for me to reach if light bulbs need to be changed? Those are the things we have to kind of start thinking about. Do I want to continue to clean 2.5 bathrooms, or do I want to bring that down? So we think about that, and don't, again, wait to the last minute till it's a decision that you have to make.
Right, and we do run into folks that have been in their home for 25, 30 years. They've homesteaded it. Of course, their property taxes have remained low, and that's I think a big reason folks don't move. Their property taxes are low because they've been there so long. But we hear of all the other things, like the 2.5 bathrooms, and the upstairs bedrooms, and all the yard maintenance, and you might be paying $1,000 in property taxes now. You'd otherwise be paying $3,000, but you're spending $8,000 to $10,000 a year in maintaining the home.
Maintaining it. And Ruthie, I think we've got a text message that came in, didn't we?
We do, yes. We have a question, and this individual says, I'm preparing to start saving for my child's college. He is not yet born, but due in March. How much money should I save for him to go to college? And is a 529 a good avenue for that?
Good question, and congratulations. You talk about thinking ahead of time.
Right.
Good person. How much you're going to save is going to depend upon where you think you want your child to go to college. If you're talking about a Yale or a Harvard, you better save some major dollars. I personally, in fact, Bob, we had this discussion not long ago. I personally love the Florida prepaid. I think that is one of the best long run for your money as such that is out there. Look into that.
Yeah. Florida prepaid, you can look into 529 plans, certainly. This kind of dovetails with a lot of what we've been talking about. These new parents, they have parents. And what we have seen is the grandparents love contributing to these, helping fund things for the grandchildren. And I'm not saying it's their obligation by any stretch of the imagination, but I'll tell you what, we see more often than not the grandparents funding these things than the parents.
In fact, I got a text message this week. Two friends of mine in New Orleans have a new grandchild, and they wanted me to send them information on different ways to invest for that child, college, or if he doesn't go to college, if he wants a trade or something else, what would be the best vehicle? So the thing I'm going to advise you about with 529 plans, here's the pros and the cons. The pros are they are designed to help you save for a child's college. The biggest feature of the 529 is as long as the monies in there are used to support that, the earnings are tax-free. That is the biggest advantage. The downside on 529s is that every one of them is in the market. Not a lot of choice as to how dollars are invested. So before you get into a 529, check them, because some of them have very high hidden fees that are kind of buried. So before you make a choice, kind of look at the differences and maybe sit down with somebody like Bob and I before you make that decision. The other thing you could do is put aside a separate account that you yourself, you're the owner, the parents, grandparents can contribute to it, and it is set aside for the child's education. But let's just say, and you hate to say something like this to a mom to be, but it happens. Let's just say the child turns out to be the kind of person who really doesn't care and doesn't want an education, and turns out to be somebody who you really don't want to give money to, then you still have control over it if it's in your name. So a lot of different ways you can look, but let's go back to answering the question. If you're looking at going to one of the Florida schools, please look into the prepaid for Florida, and look wherever you think a child may go and kind of project that, do a cost of living on that, of what that college would cost in 17, 18 years with 1.5 to 3% inflation. Education, sure, like medicine, has been going up, what is it, about 3.5, 4%?
Yeah, it's usually at least double the rate of inflation. So
yeah, which is why I think the Florida prepaid is such a good deal.
Yes.
So if you need some help looking at that, call the office, 437-3127, and I'll help you look that up. But I think it is excellent for the amount of money that you put in, what you get back. So thank you for thinking and being out there. So I hope that helped.
Yeah.
And answered your question.
Great question.
Yes.
What's next?
Okay, and thank you, Ruthie, for finding it.
Yeah.
So we want to think about possibly downsizing.
Sure.
The other thing you want to do in that pre-retirement is attack that mortgage. Not necessarily, and please don't fall for this stuff where, you know, you call the bank and they say they're going to take a payment out every 2 weeks. They charge you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Do it on your own.
Right.
Just send in extra money and say, this is for the principal, and make sure it's written on the checks, and make sure you send a note with it. And, you know, all extra money goes toward the principal, and you'll be amazed at how quickly you can pay that house down, so that when you do retire and you're living on less money, you don't have a mortgage anymore.
Right.
And for most of us, that's the biggest expense we've got.
Right. And with that goes, you know, reducing your mortgage, attacking your mortgage. Here and now, you may want to consider refinancing if you're staying in that home for any considerable amount of time. The rule of thumb, and I think everybody feels this way, you certainly want to have your home paid off, and you'd like to be debt-free going into retirement, mm-hmm, of course, but attacking your mortgage, maybe looking into refinancing as well.
If you're getting a lower interest rate and you're paying the same amount of money on a note, you're paying more toward principal.
Right.
So, and right now the refinance rates are very low. So it could be something. Now, understand, we're not saying go out and refi your home. We're saying look into it and see if for you that is a good option. Now, if you have another question, and it doesn't have to be on this subject or a comment, call us at 437-1620. We would love to hear from you. Again, pre-retirement years, use those Roth accounts. Pour money into that, people, because I just don't see, Bob doesn't see any way that the taxes are not going to be higher in 5 years, 10 years than they are right now. If I've got tax-free money to use, I'm ahead of the game.
Absolutely. The greatest account on the planet, right?
Indeed. I mean, it gives you that miracle of compounding, tripled, quadrupled, because when that money comes out, you're not going to be paying taxes at a higher rate. So look at it. And one of the other things, please do, investigate long-term care. Is it something that could be an answer for you? You could put aside a much smaller amount today that will pay for a much, much, much larger amount later and not wind up bankrupting you or your children, or, you know, you winding up on Medicaid. Medicaid now, you can walk into a long-term care facility and not really see a difference. But at the rate we're going, I don't think that's going to be the same in the years to come. So now we have asset base, long-term care policies, limited pay, long-term care policies. Please, at least, you owe it to yourself to look at them, to see how they work, and to see if you can afford them. And the younger you are when you get them, the less they cost.
Exactly. We all wish we would have secured long-term care insurance much earlier in life.
Well, I got to tell you, I did mine in my 50s, and it was the best thing I ever did. You know, because now, as I'm getting to the stage where I want to start slowing down, or, you know, possibly getting to that stage where it may be a need for me, I've got that covered.
Right.
And my policy, if I don't use it, the money that I put in goes to my heirs tax-free as a life policy. So it's not like, oh, I didn't use it, that money's gone. It becomes part of the legacy I'll leave behind. But if I need it, my expenses are covered. I don't have to go to anybody in my family to help me. That's a great thing to be able to do.
Exactly. And I think a lot of our listeners may not know that you can take IRA money and fund
yes.
a long-term care policy.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, that's an incredible benefit.
But,
You know, the policy decisions behind that are kind of like putting money in your HSA. You can take pre-tax dollars, fund your long-term care. You know, you're really not only helping yourself out, you're helping everybody out.
You help everybody out. And the great part, Bob, when that money comes back out, either for your long-term care or as a gift to the heirs if you don't use it, it's tax-free money. My two favorite words.
That's really incredible. So it's a win-win. If you need to tap into it, it's there. You paid for it with pre-tax dollars. And if you don't end up needing it, it passes to your heirs tax-free.
And you know, those are two beautiful, beautiful words. Mm-hmm. So the other things we want to do when we're looking at retirement is look at how helpful it might be for you to have a guaranteed stream of income. You know, when my dad worked, when your dad worked, Bob, the majority of companies all had pensions.
Right.
That was the thing back then. How few people now have pensions is just amazing.
Yeah.
It's like you either have to work for the government,
right.
be a school teacher. Very, very few people come to me now that have a pension
right.
program. So we have to look at that. Ruthie, we have another question, babe?
We do, yes. And I'll tell you what, I am taking some furious notes over here and really
Good.
Benefiting from this conversation. So here's Good. A question about at what age should I be looking at Social Security and also at Medicare? What's the right Ooh. Age range?
Yeah. Good question. Social Security, let's tackle that one first. I think personally, one of the biggest mistakes people make is they start Social Security too early. If you've got to have the money to survive, I understand. Mm-hmm. But if you don't make the mistake of taking your Social Security at 62, which is the earliest age that you can take it. Very often, it is worth, and Bob and I can do this for you. We can run all kind of illustrations to show you where you come out better. it's very often better to use some of that highly taxable money first, put Social Security off till later, right, than to take Social Security at 62. You know, the difference between taking at 62 and 70, Bob, do you remember that percentage?
Gosh, I want to say the difference between retirement age, full retirement age, and 70 is a factor of 1.35, basically 35% more.
Yeah, it goes up 8% a year.
Yeah, I think
once you hit full retirement. So if you're one of those people that full retirement is 66, it's 32%. If you're one of those people that's 67, it's 24%. So, and between 62 and 70, it's 132%.
And to explain it very simply, if you're looking at taking it at 62 versus 63, 64. And I think a lot of people think you have to take it either at 62, 70, or your full retirement age, which is an age in between. But the difference between 62 and 1 year later is actually 8.23%. So if you can wait a year, and the difference between 63 and 64, 64 and 65, 8.23%. It's, you know, you get a return of a built-in annuity for the rest of your life with an increase of 8.23% by waiting 1 year.
By just waiting. And if you want to know your break-even point, call us at the office, 437-3127. Come in and we'll run an analysis for you to show you that break even. Now, Medicare, of course, you cannot start till age 65. So about 3 months ahead of time, start looking. Come in, talk to Joan. Joan's our Medicare specialist. Bring her a list of your medications, the doctors you like to see, and she can start working with you to help you figure out what supplement would be the very best for you, depending upon your age and what you need. So it's not like it used to be. It's not a simple thing anymore. In October, we will be teaching again that two-hour class on Medicare at Pensacola Junior College, so you can call our office to get some more facts on that, because that's important. And before we run out of time, the last thing I want to bring in is, very seriously, let's go back to the pensions. Think about that fact of getting yourself a guaranteed stream of income with part of that large IRA, so that as you get older, inflation kicks in, you've got a stream of income that's going to start from you that you cannot outlive. Do you understand what I just said? You cannot outlive.
Right.
That is extremely important. And I can tell you, every client I put into those 5 years, 10 years ago, that are now starting to take that income, call me up and say, thank you.
And,
for putting us into this.
And back to our listener's question, at what age for Social Security now? Ruthie C., write this down, ssa.gov. If you have a Social Security number and a work history, you can put the information in. They'll ask you a few very personal questions that only you can answer, and it will spit out what your Social Security benefits will be at 62, 67, and age 70 in your case. Yes.
And that's info you have got to have. That's things that you have got to have. So we're getting close on time. One of the things I want to say to everybody, if we can help you in any way whatsoever, please call my office, 437-3127. Get Kristen to set a time for you to come and see Bob and I. We'll sit down with you and put together a plan. You got to have one, people. You got to get ready. You got to train. Go out and say, please, say thank you. And we will make this place a wonderful world.
What a wonderful
world. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.